So anybody got any big synchronicities they're tripping out on?
I was humored yesterday by I was Googling Tiger Woods' swimming pool on Jupiter Island because it's triangular shaped, and the first image that came up was a link to the sinkhole.
That's funny.
There's a Miles Mathis article on Tiger Woods that's really good, but that Alex Fulton and SJ and I were discussing. But
I was excuse me. I was on a train back from Vancouver, and the last stop on the train is Eugene, and that's where Marty lives. And I'm like, oh, I haven't talked to Marty in a bit. I should message him when I get home because I'm trying to slowly transition back into contacting people. So as soon as I get on Facebook, like literally haven't talked for months and months, and we haven't exchanged a message for months and months, I get on, and within 5 seconds he messages me and he's like, hey, what's up, you know, we haven't talked in a while, what's up? So that for me was pretty cool. And then the next day, like, it was like a one of those small, Alan, I think you've talked about these, you go to a bookstore and of course the book you're looking for or something tangentially that's perfect falls into your hands. Mm-hmm. And like I went there and it wasn't there, and they looked and looked and they said, no, it's we don't know, it's in the inventory, but we don't know where the hell it is. So tough shit. And I'm just chilling out for the last few minutes near the bookshelf. It's in the psychology section. Of course, the girl brings it right up and drops it right in. It's the first book on top of her giant pile that she's reshelving. So that was really cool. So just like, what, you know, little small stuff. It was Eric Fromm's The Sane Society.
Mm.
I really like his work. He's really good. He's like, I think he really extends classical Freudianism. I mean,
yeah, I've seen him referenced a lot. I never read him.
He's pretty prolific. But he's of like that neo-Freudian school that kind of sees pleasure in a much wider context and frames it that way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was the book. And I was looking at Reich stuff too, but the bookstore I'm at doesn't have any new books of his.
Have you seen Nymphomaniac? David.
What was that?
Has anyone here seen Nymphomaniac?
I just
in the theater. Yeah.
So the version that's not the director's cut doesn't do it all as much justice. But there's like I watched it recently, and there are certain threads that are just fucking phenomenal. And I need to check again, but it's not the most. It's not my favorite scene to freeze frame. And at the time, I was like 2 a.m. or something. I was with my friend. I didn't want to freeze frame it. But when he comes out at the very end with the, you know, but you fucked 1,000 men or whatever. If you haven't seen this movie, I'm completely spoiling it right now. But his watch seems to read 9/11. Like the arms are on the 9 and the 11. Not 11, like if you had the 2 hours. You know, like it was on 9 o'clock and 11, but like nine, like literally 9/11. So I was, I thought that was fucking weird. Cause the whole idea with the fish hook in it, that he's relating it to fly fishing at the beginning, that that's what she's doing. But then it's this repeated theme. Like if you watch the newest Sherlock Holmes, you know, they do the same deal as the smaller, the fish that thinks it's going to eat the other fish. And then the bigger that the smaller fish actually eats the other fish. Cause it's all a matter of perspective or whatever, you know, like that flip book at the end of Sherlock Holmes. I don't know if you guys saw that. I watch a lot of movies, I guess, but
sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Could you relate that also to like we were talking about the idea of Venus? Jason was saying, right, that Venus is the worst choice in that respect, but the idea of almost like a Venus flytrap as take it to a vagina dentata if you want, but the idea of fly fishing, I haven't seen the movie, but that's what I immediately it's the interplay of the sexes where it's like the masculine seems like I'm going to penetrate you, I'm going to fuck you, but literally you're getting swallowed up.
Right. Well, it's because the lovers are directly connected with the fish hook in the sense of the emperor and the empress being separated by, you know, in the current system. in the ninth gate. The reason why it's a ninth gate too is because if you add up the pairs, so if you're looking at the one on top of the other, if you add each pair up, you'll get 9999999 all the way down the row, except at the beginning where you get a 4 and a 4. And the thing is that Crowley had the two extra Magises. And so if you add the two extra Magises, you technically get 144, 144, and 144 is the gematrical value of Yetzer Chaim, which is the Tree of Life. And so you have the Tree of Life encoded into the first, and then the rest are all nines. But then if you add Reish on one side, what flanks it, you have a Reish and Tet. So you have Reish is 200. And if you add that to the 9 of Tet, it reduces to 11. So technically you have 9999999 11.
Hey, you said Reish is 200. I was thinking of this. What does Reish correspond to?
The sun.
Okay.
And you say in the pictorial, it would be the front of the head, whereas Kuf, the moon, would be the back of the head, which seems to be referring to the pituitary and the pineal, as far as I can tell.
Because there was a passage, a Crowley passage about Go. Kaylee, I don't know if you have that at all anywhere handy.
Yeah.
But there was an interesting passage, and like my mind hearing him talk about go, 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 and I was thinking not only about the game Go, like but also in Monopoly, that Go is this sort
of... Don't pass Go. Don't collect $200, yeah.
Well, so they're right. Then it's like 200. Go is corresponded to 200.
Okay. Right.
Was there a meaning to that? Do you have that passage?
I have it. I could
read
it.
Oh, that's good.
So basically what happened was that I was reading the Book of Thoth at work, I don't know, last week or something, and I read this passage. And then I was driving home, and the car in front of me had this really interesting license plate that I took a picture of, which is, I guess I'll go ahead and I'm scrolling through message right now. Oh, okay. So the license plate read 3139 go. And earlier that day, I had read a passage that said, should I just read it?
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, there are two parts to this. The first part says, this is from the Book of Thought. It says, attached to these are the names of the four virtues of the Adept. Those which enable him to overcome the resistance of the elements, they are to will, to dare, to know, and to keep silent. By the harmonious exercise of these, the fifth element of spirit is formulated in the being of the Adept. It is the God within the sun, which is the center of the universe from the human point of view, with its own particular virtue, which is to go. The essential characteristics of the Godhead is this faculty of going, the free movements of space and time and all other possible conditions. In the Egyptian hieroglyphic system, this faculty of going was represented as a sandal strap, which represents by its hieroglyphic form the crux ansata, the rose and cross, which in turn gives the formula for love under will, the secret attainment. But then, later on, I was reading another passage that says, thus 93 is related to 31, being a multiple of it. 13 is related to 1, since ACHD, the Hebrew word for unity, means 1.
Ahad.
So, yeah. It was just, like, after reading both of those, and then I see, 3139 go.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because
39 in gematria is the value of tall. So if you say tet lamed, right? It means do. So it's where there's in the prophecy in Isaiah in the Tanakh, it's the dew that will awaken the dead from their graves. And so it's like, oh, let your dead revive, let corpses arrive, awaken, shout for joy. You will dwell in the dust, for your dew is the dew of light. You make the land of the shadows come to life. And so it's a code, because if you add up Yud, He, Vav, using Aleph's, so if you say Yud, Vav, Dalet, you know, Hey, Aleph, Vav, Aleph, Vav, you get 39. And then if you add Hey, Aleph, which would be completing the Tetragrammaton, then it equals 45, which is the value of Ma, which is the root word of like mana, like what they eat that keep that sustains them in the desert, you know. But it's also a question, which means what is it, is literally what Ma is. But it's also the same grammatical value of Adam. So the Adam, the male and the female together as one, right? That's, you know, Aleph in blood, because Dom is blood. That is, if you take the dew, which resurrects the dead, and you add the hay, then the hay is the Shekhinah. So you're adding the feminine to it. So the point is that if you're seeing how this expresses itself on the Tree of Life, it has to do with those nine, because the nine, there's nine different arrangements for how you can arrange Yud-Heh-Vav. So if you take those three letters, you can only arrange them in these, in so many variations. And so so that happens in Nymphomaniac, when she has her car and she stops it in the road and she removes all the plugs from the spark plugs, you know, and there's eight, because they know where Gimel goes. So it's like, how many different ways can you arrange these? And she actually says mathematically what the probability is of how many different ways you can arrange it. And so that happens in Pi, when he's like, I'm sure you've written down every 216 digit number, haven't you? You've intoned them all, you know, when he's talking to the rabbis, you know. It's because eventually you're going to come up with it. But the idea is that the thing will run without this other element, which is the stone that the builders rejected. But the prophecy is that that gets put in its place. That's the hay. So you add that, and then you end up with the complete Adam, which is, you know, this other thing. And so, yeah, it's full circle. It's basically describing that we take things so far that we end up back in Eden.
Yeah. It's like, fuck, man. Yeah. I have a quick question. So you mentioned the number 45. Do you mind reiterating what the 45 was, because I have a crazy thing with 45.
Yeah, it's the value of Ma, as in mana, okay, which means what is it? It's a question. Yes. And it's also the value of Adam. So Aleph and Dom. So that's Aleph and blood equals 45.
Wow. Okay.
And it works every time.
Sorry.
What's that?
No. I said, and it works every time. Billy D. Williams? No? Anybody? David, would you... this was something else that we had talked about in our car ride, was Hannah was trying to talk with the idea of these sort of leaps from 777 to 888 to 999, the importance of this 111. And sure. I know you had sort of... I was trying to remember some of your points about it, and I couldn't remember. I'm sure I didn't remember all of them. And what are your sort of? I've heard you go off on 111 a number of times.
Yeah, well, it's the it's the grammatical value of Aleph spelled out. So if you say Aleph Lamed Pei, that's 111. But then Aleph itself is one, right? So it's kind of this joke. But then also in the Babylonian Sun Square, it's a series of 111s that equals the 666. So that's how you reach it. So 111 and 666 are related in that way. It's also, if you rearrange Aleph Lamed Pei to be, what is it? It's apple. So Aleph Pei Lamed, it's the Hebrew word for veiling or occult, for something to be hidden. And so it's just a rearrangement of Aleph, and you end up with that. But the thing is that there's all these reoccurrences of when you add the Aleph, like Met and Amet. So Amet is truth, Met is death, which is why there's Met life insurance. It's a joke, because they're like, oh, get Met, you know, get Met, you'll pay. But no, get, you know, Met life insurance, because Met is death. So death, life, you know, it's fucked up.
Well, hold on, because there's another meaning to Met. I have, I'm going to try and pull this up as quickly as possible. I'm pretty sure there's an Egyptian word met, because I had corresponded the, in New York, there's the Metropolitan Museum,
the Met.
Yeah, the, well, right, the Met.
The Mets, the baseball team.
Yeah. Well, right, exactly, right. It's the Metropolis, all, like, right, so there's, like, you know, it's a it's the Metropolitan, but there's also, there's something else, because the, this is where the Temple of Dendor is, across from Jackie's apartment and all this sort of stuff, that there was a like, this is the museum, and what I realize is that the Egyptian Met actually, I think I got it right here, yeah. The Egyptian word met means phallus, front, male, masculine, procreate, inundation, the emission of the Nile god.
Oh, great.
So you're saying in Hebrew, met means death?
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, that's a direct. Yeah.
Ra works the same way. Ra is like evil, but it's also like brother, I think. It's weird. But like Ra, like, what was it? There was something about the gematrical value of Ra in Hebrew that I thought was fascinating, but I can't remember what it was. There's so many things to keep track of. But the thing is that if you say 6 times 6 times 6, you get 216, which is the gematrical value of Gevura. But that's across from the 72. 72 times 3 equals 216. But then if you add 7 plus 7 plus 7 to 216, then you get 237.
Damn.
You follow that?
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with that necessarily. But yeah, what'd and then say, and then you get 42 from 2 short. Times 3 times 7.
Jason, say it one more time. I'm sorry.
Well, but then 237 is just one aleph short of 238, which is the important racial number in the little Jacob mystery.
That's right.
And but then 1237 is the number of delegates needed for Donald Trump to win the nomination.
Oh, great.
So that's what one plus 237.
Would you have any correspondence to number 327? Yeah, 327.
It comes up a lot.
No, the TV show was 227.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, right, 227 is pi.
Yeah.
Right. 723 is the first day of the dog days of summer, depending on how you're looking at it. But yeah.
Which right, is so 723 and 237, but what about 3? No, yeah, oh god, we're just throwing numbers. 327.
It's like that that Tim and Eric thing with like the dictionary of numbers, where it's just like all the numbers you want, they're all here. Fucked up.
Well, I just want to say about this Nymphomaniac movie, 9/11, if you add them together, equals 11. And you also have the 11 in the 9/11. But 11 is interesting because of the Fibonacci numbers, right? 0, and then you have 2 1s in the Fibonacci sequence. So it's the only repeated integer. And anyhow, I just think that's an interesting, the idea of two towers also being represented there in that repeated integer. And I don't know what you were just saying, David, but 144 is also a Fibonacci number.
Right, and it's the ninth Fibonacci number.
Yeah, and so it's the ninth Fibonacci, but that's also a big thing in the movie, right? Those are Fibonacci numbers. He lets her know when she's talking about the sex act, or when she lost her virginity.
Exactly, which are 3 and 5. So you have 8, yeah, and then you have 8 reoccurs, so it's 8, 8. So it's this whole thing, and and it's the whole deal is that she's like Jesus, right? But the thing is that all signs point to what the people's religion actually was, what Jesus came to fill the role of, was actually a female. It's the feminine. That's what's on the cross. And it's a thing, too, of why was the emperor hey? And it's because the emperor had to embody the feminine in order to have a working, functional empire. Like, that was the whole point. He had to embody that. And so to take him and then to change his meaning is specific. I mean, it has specific intentions behind it, but it works out. It's just like those moving around the spark plugs. It's like they found the one that worked, even though it wasn't the, you know. So, but yeah, it's because 233 is the value of where Adam and Eve leave the garden. So they're misleading in the film Pi, because he says, oh, if you take the value of the garden, but then he says Kedem. Kedem isn't Aden. Aden is Aden. And so Kedem is the east. And so that ties into the Babylonian sun square, too, because it's by moving, northeast is how you generate the spiral in the squares. So you can connect each square into the next, and they generate this spiral by the diagonals. And so it's this repeated theme of this diagonal thing and the same directions. It's where Adam and Eve leave the garden is how we get back in. It's because if you divide the value of
Yetzirah the meaning of east
by
of Eden,
Kedem, you end up with the golden spiral.
Is that the "Hey, you got to hide your love away"? You think that's what the Beatles song was about?
I joke about that quite a bit. I take that with "Hey Jude." Because that's perfect, because you got Judah, you know. Hey, Judah, uh-huh. Give me a... Oh, God. Uh-huh. Yeah, which is great to play with the short film by Roman Polanski, Lampa, it's the lamp. Just that song, because it's the length of that song. So, Patrick Sveck figured that one out.
Hey, guys, now that we're talking about the Fibonacci sequence, may I make an interjection about Strange Attractors and the Mandelbrot set in relation to the Sophianic mystery?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think if what I've figured out is something that can be repeated, I think I may have just discovered something new. So two nights ago, or shit, what day was it? Three nights ago now. Misty, Kaylee, and I had a Skype conversation, and
I just got home. I just wanted to say hi.
Hey.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you, Misty?
I'm good. I love you.
Hi.
Continue. Sorry. Hi, honey. Sorry. I'll stop interrupting. Continue.
Okay, I mean it.
Oh, perfect timing. I was just about to tell him about the incredible experience we had the other night in our Skype conversation. We lost the recording, sadly, but either Azathoth or Cthulhu was on the line. Davy Jones is, I've actually found him. And this goes into crossing the Uncanny Valley and, you know, the Seahorse Valley in the Mandelbrot set. Which is basically when your consciousness is so fractalized in such high resolution that you're able to actually... okay, so when we were in Boise the second night, or the night we got there, actually, was the night of the Worm Moon. So, you know, perfect timing. Of course, that was the day to seek Ouroboros. And I don't know if... Okay, so you know the most recent 42 minutes? How many of you have you listened to that?
Which one was it?
I did. Excuse me. I did. And Doug was on it. But he might be gone.
Yeah, I was on it.
That's right. Excuse me.
Jesus.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, SJ too, yeah.
And Talitha,
yep.
What about it, Anna?
So, What? Oh, okay.
I'm just
so,
curious. Yeah, what about it? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what I actually did. I don't know when I became in perfect alignment with this, but everything you guys were talking about in that episode is a direct reflection of dreams I had when I was a little kid, a story I wrote in the first and second grade, a D&D character I created, and you were talking about, I mean, the main icon was a water bear, so I figured, well, obviously you guys know, like, you figured it out, you're talking about me, right? Because you know that's my signature. I mean, that's the new, like, so last year I created this Zohar. It's like a tardigrade in an egg of bismuth. And what's really cool about the tardigrade is that the tree of life is in its structure, and if you turn it to the side, you also have the thelemic star. So it's like, and if you learn anything about the water bear, it's like the perfect reflection of superliminal bears. So there's like this pole star thing going on. And it was on the Monday, January 11th, or was it the 12th? It was 2 days before. 2 days before my David Bowie dream, that Kaylee, Zenor, myself, and Alan are connected to, that has to do with the Powerball and Sirius and Rosicrucianism and David Bowie, and it's just, I made this, it was like this talismanic, prophecy, basically, while I was at work. I have this Bodhisattva necklace that I got in Colorado when I was still in school in Boulder. That's a red thread with a jade bead, so it's like, you know, a jade dragon with Ariadne's thread with this blue bear. So it's like a water bear with a chunk of bismuth. So, and this was coming through kind of as like a inspired by David Bowie, because last year I met one of his doppelgangers at work. So
what, Cure and, Delay?
What?
Cure Delay? No. The same and, Bowman. David Bowman is kind of a double. Never mind.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is, like, so there have been six people in my life that have told me that I look like Jennifer Connelly. And I mean, all of her films are my favorites. I mean, so it's, there's this,
do you break a lot of mirrors?
You sound kind of like her.
Do you walk to the end of a lot of piers?
See, this is the thing. Okay, so I had this dream years ago where I was in the center of the Mandelbrot fractal, like the heart center, and I saw this, I was swimming in the lake, and I saw, like, I guess my twin flame or whatever on the other side of the seam of noise. And I couldn't actually, I mean, I couldn't cross over. And it was just it was just like kind of the most incredible dream. But it also connects to my first rape dream of being raped by Ursula and Flotsam and Jetsam. So I realized, like, oh shit, that's where I'm going to be going back to. And then, you know, just last year, I've just kind of been started to reflect on my life, just kind of in a constant state of nostalgia. And I realize that I have, you probably have equal access to my dreams as memories in waking life. So I guess I've just figured a lot of things out. Like in dream maps, just seeing the same places that other people have been to. So once that started happening, I just started picking up all these anomalies like every day, and to the point where I was just constantly in falling through the largest rabbit hole I've ever heard of. And this has happened once before, so I realized that whatever the fuck I figured out is just going to keep happening, and it's I need to share this soon before I just totally lose it. But it seems like the higher the resolution of fractalization, that's how black swan events are.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they manifest. I mean, back to like the Mothman. I've been in that state for a while. All of my favorite numbers are constantly coming down the pike at work. It's just like this constant portal of mirrors through everything.
Hey, Hannah, did you say that? Ursa? Did you say a dream about a rape of Ursa?
You know, I didn't say that, but that's totally okay.
I'm sorry.
Did you have that dream? Is that why you're asking?
Oh, no. Ursula.
Ursula.
On a side note, I'm starting an Ariel and Ursula inspired costume soon.
Hmm. What?
Ursula,
like the angel or the mermaid?
It's going to be both in one.
Oh.
Anna, I'm sorry, I just brought that up because my friend Talitha is named from a star in the constellation of that, I think. It's also a biblical name. But and then that author that we're talking about in that book chat, a lot of his content is derived from dreams he had. So the idea that you could have had similar childhood dreams to what he's writing about, I think, is interesting because I think the sort of shared dreams or dreams that your dreams could be other people's dreams and other people's dreams can be your dreams, like that. It's pretty frequent.
It seemed like what you were kicking it off with was the water bearer with 42 minutes.
Yes. Yes.
What was that about? I mean, I didn't completely... I'm trying to follow the chain from the water bearer thing that caught your attention, because that was your name in multiple places that you used was water bearer.
I guess it's sort of like
Skype image right here?
Oh, I can't see any Skype images. I have a different kind of Skype now.
Like the icon, I mean, you see like the names, you see like Douglas Bowles, he's like, it says Sync Book Radio, and Misty Greer, she's doing like her S5 pose, and do you see that?
I don't have that, I can't figure out my new Skype situation, but yeah.
Explain what Water Bear is, because I think maybe that would help.
Is it a bear or a bearer? I'm just
curious.
I
know there's been discussion. There's been discussions of bears, right? Water bears before, and I'm just not sure which. I can't hear very clear. My Skype,
Hannah's logo is the water bear, which is a microscopic thing, correct, Hannah?
Oh, that fucking thing. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's the animal, the mammal, the bear.
Talking about Aquarius as the water bearer. That's funny.
That's what I thought, too.
I was talking about the star card earlier. Saudi is not the star, and it's pouring the vessels, you know?
Yeah.
But that wasn't it. It was the water bear.
I think, right?
Okay, so what I was going to say about it is that there are just so many tight correspondences between that and just the mysteries of the word, like, dub. Like, if you go back to William Gibson's Neuromancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess the original Germanic root for bear that was changed to dub, which in Hebrew is also dub, which is like dove. And I see which. Trying to remember.
I was reading a few years ago.
Water bear.
The dove in the Torah with when Noah releases the dove, and there was something significant about the name of dove. I know that there's the Columbia thing, with the etymology of Columbia and the Colum or whatever. Alan probably knows about that. Columbia.
Oh, just that what Columbia? C O L U.
Right. It's sorry. Christopher Columbus was a symbolic name. It's really like a Christ.
C O L U M B is the Latin for dove, right?
Right.
Well, and anyway, Hannah, you've mentioned to me before the double G, the GG. How does that relate? I know you've explained it sort of, but would you be willing to go into that? Or does that relate?
Honestly, I don't have instant recall of that right now.
Okay.
But the open and closed mem.
Uh-huh.
In its correspondence to Ursa Minor and Major, like the mother bear licking up into shape by a drop of water. That's how water bears can kind of live forever. Or they drain the water from its nucleus and they go into the state. It's called the tone. And it only, it takes a drop of water to be revived. This can just kind of be passed on indefinitely. Sort of in the same way as like Amanita muscaria, which is also another.
I'm just curious in what sense?
Like the traditional shamanic way of imbibing this mushroom. The shaman would.
Oh, with the deer in the urine, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you would snow. Pass the urine.
Tying it back to Snow White.
Right.
In this case, Snow Yellow.
Oh, don't eat the yellow snow. That's right.
not true.
Well, ideally, you probably drink like a good, gallon of water first.
Right.
But you pass it, you can pass it up to six times without, or you could re-up six times without having to eat it again. So, this is just a kind of another alien thing,
Mm-hmm.
Golden showers, golden ratio, back to Fibonacci.
Totally. Saturn comes back around.
The water maker, golden showers.
It's a chalice loop. GG77, go gadget. There was a whole series way back when, some classic sync. Somebody made a video, the brick video with Mario. I don't know if people remember that. He's talking about the Book of Revelations and stuff. Whose video was that? Do you remember, Alan? The guy who was like, oh man,
that was a long time ago. And Mario.
Yeah, there was a guy who was analyzing Inspector Gadget too, and he had this whole thing with the Go Gadget being GGG777, you know, because G is the seventh letter of the alphabet. And so that's the way I always took it with the Masonic G, that it was just because it was the seventh point between the square and the compass. But it's a recent revelation to realize, no, it's Gimel, and it's the hidden sustenance, like why it's a camel associated with Gimel, you know. But it's a unexplainable thing from how we get from the supernal to the terrestrial, and it's through a water gate. So if you watch The Box with Cameron Diaz, which was kind of the, in a sense, it was the sequel to Donnie Darko, but Donnie Darko has the same thing with, have you ever seen a portal, you know, and that the thing coming out of the chest was like a water creature, kind of reminiscent of the abyss or something, you know. But in The Box, there's these three pillars of water, and he has to decide which one to go through, and he decides to go through the middle because the kid who held up the two things earlier, and he's like, oh, I'll go through the second, you know. So he's showing the middle path. But the prophecy that I'm looking at is all about this purple star, because the two sides are blue and red, right? So you have Joachim and Boaz established in strength, but then the center line, that's, it has like a I think it says a seven pointed star with seven stars at every point, moves up the tree in the center. And then we don't know which direction it's going to go. And everyone, the whole world is looking at this star. It's a fixed star. It's describing like a pole star. But then it moves to the right. It sides with the right. And then it pulls the other one towards it. And so and then all becomes a hod. It becomes one. But I thought that was really interesting that it was a purple star, considering that the star card in Crowley's deck has that purple septogram, you know. Which is relatable to what you're talking about, maybe, because it's the, in that case, it's the water bearer, right? She's pouring the emanated flow. So showing how it can still be distributed despite things being rearranged or turned, you know.
You also have the water box, you know, is a slang for vagina, and that's a water gate. I mean, the water.
Oh, that's the whole idea. It's a birthing. And that Tet itself is supposed to be you know, like, the entry point for a baby. I'm sorry, how did I say that? So, this, you know, I don't want to just say vagina because it's not that. It's literally the whole, the baby coming out of the womb, you know, the water breaking is happens from there, from that pathway, from the terrestrial. So literally it's describing something being born, that there's this newborn. And so that's what trips me out. I'm on this whole forever and a day, this Rosemary's Baby 2001 A Space Odyssey kick, because I believe that there are two sides of the same event, you know, that it's the eon of Horus, that you're looking at Horus the younger being born, and that we, as a collective, our senses are literally just like coming into being. We're moving into another, we're developing another sense, and we don't develop other senses until we actually experience a need for it. And that's,
can I would ask be, a question? You know,
what's that?
Can I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
What? Who calls me ma'am?
I do.
Okay, what is everyone's favorite word for vagina?
Favorite? I can't have favorites. I don't know. You'll be about
to pick one. You have to pick one. I'm asking you third a question. One. You have to pick one.
I love them all. I mean, I've got four or five favorites.
I just, if you don't mind, I just want to read. This is what Doug dropped in earlier when I said about the trial of Paris. And it says here, Paris is forced to choose. He tries to get out of the situation, but to no avail. Aren't there times in our lives when we all have to make a choice that we really don't want to make and try our best to find a way out of it? So sorry, she's saying you have to pick one.
You must choose.
Choose the form of your destroyer.
I knew you were going to say that as soon as you said choose.
Hey David, I don't know if you've heard it. I don't know if you've heard it, but in the book club chat 42 minutes thing, there's the characters in this book, Area X, the Southern Trilogy, there's an expedition into this unknown area, and they keep mistake one character insists on calling this structure that goes down into the ground a tower, and the rest of the people refer to it as a tunnel, and so there's this back and forth of calling it a tower and a tunnel, which I think it's, I thought you might be want to hear.
Yeah,
but we can talk about the China too. I mean,
a topological anomaly is another term for it later in the trilogy. So anyhow, cool. Just to throw that there. And Misty, I would say,
are you talking about a world?
Wait, is someone,
I'm going to say sweetness. I'm going to go with that now. The least vulgar and kind of the most sort of sacred. Yeah.
You, SJ, you would. David,
so today
did you say what your favorite word was?
Year?
What?
420 today is the 111th day of the year.
Really?
Is
there's
it?
Been one days of the year till today. And then 9/11 is when there's 111 days left of the year, right?
Oh.
That's weird.
That's interesting.
And we're going into the Gevurah, you know, in terms of the decans of the tarot, we're going from the four of discs. Or no, I forgot, one of the fours into the five of disc into the worry card. And so that's why that 420 rub is you're losing the stability of the four and you're breaking into sort of the chaos of the fifth sephira. And so that's why, you know, what is it, Hitler's birthday, Waco. I mean, there's a whole thing on this, but you've got, what's the other one? Oklahoma City bombing, that happened in the 90s. It seems like this zone. I think it's
discovery of penicillin as well. I'm just kidding. I want to throw some positive. It was the day that the first Care Bears episode premiered. No.
That's interesting. It's just a mirror to 9/11. I've never heard that.
Did you see my Care Bear?
Oh, no. That goes back to the Gummy Bear song. Holy shit.
Which Care Bear do you have?
The 420 is 9/11. It's just a reverse. It's fascinating, you know.
Yeah. Totally.
And because that it's like the dark is reflected, it's sort of a resonant darkness, you know. And that if you want to view it from that theory, you know, or from that frame.
But, well, the whole idea is with the Ari that it's that there's a crack in everything. So when you're looking at something that you think is perfect, there's this crack in it. It's like the meaning of the septogram is it's not a balanced figure. And so that's how the light gets in. So it's like the whole thing is like, oh, you think that this is the perfect empire. It's their vision of a one-world government, but there's this fucking giant crack, and that crack is Tisha B'Av. So the most negative thing is also the most positive when it gets brought to the light, which is what the meaning is of that I above the tower. Not just, you could be relating it to it that Ion is I, right? Its value is 70, and then there's a 70 intelligences that rule over the planet. And so it's just the prophecy is about this, that the star basically goes up and it disperses those intelligences. So there's basically like a hold on the planet that's been there for like this incredibly insane long amount of time where there's these quadrants and they're ruling over the nations and everyone is serving them and they express themselves as this one eye. But really it's like the eye of Gevurah. And so they're all serving this secondary light. And they think that that light of illumination is the ultimate illumination, or they have no other basis for comparison. So they give everything to it, and all the sacrifices go towards that. And so that's why they're like, that's why Kubrick is Moses, because like Kubrick's death day, you know, you have 666 days before his death was the first computer beat a man at chess designed by IBM. 666 days after was 1101. So you have, he's standing in the middle, and it's literally it's when the waters get parted, because you know the 216 letter name of God comes from Moses standing at the Red Sea holding up his staff where he parts the waters. And so you can see that the parting of the waters are the same thing as the two pillars, because you have this, it's also like the opening of the Torah scroll. It's just this thing. And so that's why throughout Kubrick's entire career he has this three-point perspective or whatever. It's because whenever you have a triangle like that, you're communicating the dynamics of the principle of the thing. And so it's that whole point of like, you know, the 72 times three. So there's 72 letters in each verse, and there's three verses, and it's a song that Moses sings. And so, but Kubrick did the same thing symbolically. So like Kubrick is essentially Moses in terms of the Stargate business. It's fucking weird.
What does love come into that? Because I know the rabbi, your rabbi, I forgot his name, Goldberg, his talk Baruch Goldberg, he says that there's a choice. So you can either feed evil, or we have this choice to sort of feed love to kind of pacify the evil that had entered through the crack. I mean, I know I'm butchering it, But it's funny because you mentioned the, you know, anthem, the Leonard Cohen anthem song, and he talks about love like a refugee. You know, everyone to love right. will come, but like a refugee.
Yes.
And so where does Kubrick and love fit in? I'm curious in your you know vision here. I mean, is, do you think Kubrick has a loving spirit? You know, in spite of sort of the mechanical surface. I mean, is there love that's part of his message?
There, is that why yeah, there, what there, a, it's kind of like. Like
the end of Eyes Wide Shut, just to say the end of Eyes Wide Shut, I mean, she says, let's fuck. I mean, we need to fuck as soon as possible. And that seems to maybe be an expression of a love. Maybe
that's a mirror. It's showing you the dynamics of how the thing works. It's all about when that ape at the beginning of 2001 tilts his head and looks at the bone. And then it's all about how David Bowman, when he looks at that broken glass on the floor and he tilts his head. It's because he's recognizing that it's the like on what at the first time it happened, it saw the need for this to survive. And so it's the story because you have the tree of knowledge is the monolith, right? And then right afterwards, you have Cain and Abel. So it's the playing out of the story with Cain and Abel. And then you have the one with the offering of the vegetation and then the other one with the offering of the meat. And God is happy with the meat. He doesn't see a problem with it. But then out of jealousy and rage, there's the killing of the person. And so then God's not happy with that. So it's all about what God wants, like the Roger Waters song, right? What God wants. But at the end, it's the next phase in evolution where we see that the vessel, because from Keter, you have Aleph on the right side, and then you have Beit on the left. Beit is the house. It's the structure. Aleph is life breath, and it's the ox, the sacrifice. But the point is that you have, what is the thing? Is it the shell of the thing? Is it the border of the thing? Or is it what's inside of that? And so, like, if you were looking at a shell, right, we would relate to the shell of the structure of what's standing out in space, and you say, oh, this is the thing, but it's not the life of the thing. What's primary? What's first? I mean, they're ultimately connected, but like, what is coming first in the formation? And it's the space, but the space isn't empty. It's empty with fullness, right? And so that's what happens in 2001, is that the glass breaks, but then he sees the life. And if we saw the life, then all our perceptions would follow suit, and these things wouldn't be as they are. We'd be in it's a completely unknown what that would be like, you know. Kubrick seems to acknowledge that, but a lot of it is like pointing beyond itself. He takes the extreme of what happens with Gevorah, but it's all about the next step. It's like 2010, The Year We Made Contact, isn't the greatest film. It's done pretty poorly, especially when it's cycling through David Bowman's birth, growth, decay, and death back around. But it does the justice to that movement from the left to the right to the mercy, because the mercy is what's primary. And so that's when Hal realizes the necessity for his own demise and embraces it. So it's the mechanical mind, the left side of the brain, recognizing the need for this. So it allows for it. It's like the ego of the thing is like, okay, I see it. Okay, yeah, I'm a problem. Gotcha.
David, is that like the two-order thing? Like explicit order, implicate order type dynamic?
Sure. You could take it that way. I mean, basically what it comes down to is that the part of our brain that recognizes synchronicity in a real way isn't the left. The left can relate to it in all these different ways and it can pull it apart, but the real, like, you know, insight is of the right. That's like when Jung handed the woman the beetle that had flown in the window while she was telling him the dream about the beetle while they were in Liverpool. And that was his first big synchronicity, you know, was around this beetle. That connection of her with her dream from the right connecting with the left, and then there was a breakthrough. That was like one of his first big breakthroughs in psychoanalysis, and it was actually him going against what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to stand, like, go up to somebody who you're psychoanalyzing and be like, hey, look at this thing that just flew in the window. But he saw that that was important, you know. But it's for that reason.
And you said earlier in the conversation, like, synchronicity is the first thing, and then causal laws come from that, basically. And that's what Jung was trying to describe synchronicity as, or bring it into a more mainstream physics context, saying sort of like what they use the anthropic principle to describe now, like the Goldilocks nature of the universe, everything is just right for us.
Right.
So, the major defense of that is the anthropic principle, but Jung was defending it on synchronistic grounds. He's saying, well, actually there's this just acausal, just right nature to things. That's the synchronistic acausal, sort of the quantum nature or the quantum reflection in nature, kind of like no cause. And then from that, right. Our more mechanical laws only take as primary because we can grasp the mechanical laws easier, especially when you think of like how man is mutated now. What can we grasp? It's just the most basic, superficial shit, and it's mechanical stuff. So we think that's primary.
Right. We're pushing it as far as we possibly can, that side of things. And so what we end up doing by doing that is when we take it to its extreme, then it meets with its other side. We get to the opposite through the thing's extreme because it's actually a loop or a spiral, really.
You've talked about LSD like that, right?
Sure. Like
go far enough to the materialistic side and you come up with the most spiritual technology of the century, basically.
Sure. Yeah, that's the Arthur C. Clarke whole thing, too. And that was in The Box as well. I don't know if you guys have seen The Box. Who's seen The Box with Cameron Diaz?
I've seen it.
Several years ago.
Who's seen Donnie Darko?
That was a sequel to Donnie Darko, an unofficial sequel?
The symbolism of Donnie Darko and the style and actors and all these things are like, it continues on the exact same theme as Donnie Darko. So it's like, if you're puzzling around Donnie Darko, The Box continues with it and ties it together. And it ties in with Jack Parsons, too, in a major way. And Mars and what the significance of Mars in this whole thing. Because by then, that was a big important question in terms of the attributions and why things are changed in the specific ways that they are. Because we were relating Gevura with the sun before, and now we're equating it with Mars. And so they attached Mars with the sun in that way, but they did the same thing with the magic squares that are laid out across the whole entire world, which is what Spartacus was opposed to, which is my feeling of why Kubrick took on that whole project, was because Spartacus was crucified not just for what we're told, but he was against city planning. Every city had to be a 36-square-mile grid, which encodes the Babylonian sun square. And so it's like the Romans, just like, you know, they were literally covering the world with this template of a magic square. And then they were laying in the other magic squares into those squares. And you can see it in Scott Onstott's work, too. You know, it's being represented all around the world. In a very direct way, and it seems to be a way to gain power, you know, because it's in plain sight, and that does something to people. Like, if you're looking at something and you can see it, but you don't, because your right brain sees it, but your left brain won't accept it. And so that's like I was saying about the basis in Eyes Wide Shut. It's like, you see the connection, you're right, you recognize it, but then, you know, you're having to explain it with your left, and it's hard to put it into words or to know where to begin. And so, like, most people see what's going on, but they don't know what to do with it.
Call it a conspiracy theory and dismiss it?
Yeah, it's like everything gets kind of like, yeah, everything becomes a conspiracy theory or whatever. But even for people who are recognizing conspiracy theories, it doesn't stop there. It's like, if you dig deep enough, you get to this fucking crazy, like, primordial level where you see that everything is connected with its own intelligence, and we're projecting on top of it, but that doesn't change the inherent meaning. It's that there's inherent meaning in things. Like, we discovered numbers. Like, we discovered those. Like, those are there already. Like, we draw the numbers, represent the numbers, and relate to it through our left brain. But, like, inherently, the numbers are already there. That's why language is math. And what that means, like, we're so far removed from that. Like, people were speaking in math. Dig that.
Yeah. That's kind of why it's, like, I don't know if it's, like, a crucial threshold to cross, but it seems like at some point, speaking in binary and trinary and quaternary language may be, I mean, if we're going to be capable of you know, nurturing AI and being or beating it at all at anything, I mean, that might be. I mean, that's crossing the uncanny valley, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, like, that's where we're headed, so the sooner we do that, the better equipped we'll be in communicating this language. I mean, I wonder if this is what Common Core math is ultimately training us to do.
Yeah, good question.
I mean, I haven't actually gone into it, but it sort of makes sense, you know, if yeah.
I mean, taught in schools has been doing that for a long time. No one's been teaching math in a creative way in the West forever because it's always been a practical nuts and bolts proposition. It's how do you build something with this? It's not a creative enterprise. And the people that do creatively are pure mathematicians who operate in a reality and speak in a language no one can understand.
Project Crow is
the best known version of that.
Historically, it's a liberal art. It's actually one of the seven liberal arts or whatever. And it's a pure mathematics, theorems, proving things. And yeah, that's can be inspiring. And that certainly does exist. But no, I mean, just to throw that out there.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it's just, I don't know, math is pure abstraction. And that's hard for kids to start to
wrap their heads in. Sexy as shit.
It is sexy. but David, you're mentioning like, I pose this question is like, you know.
Wait, John, what's your favorite word for a vagina?
Oh, it's honey pot. Honey pot. Honey pot. It's now sweetness.
Whoa,
sweetness.
What?
You just titillated.
I just took a photo of a page in a book the other day when I went through an adventure through my favorite bookstore, just to kind of test the waters, and it was fucking scary because it was all still going back to Lake Manobrat and I guess like the sort of invasion tactics that ET would use that are like asymmetrical mirrors, which is also something that I have been writing about for years. So I guess I really need to keep focusing on that if I'm going to match the demiurge or whatever. But I think there was this one page in I think it was a Larry Niven novel that mentioned the honeypot as being like the most intelligent race in the universe or something. I mean, it was
what people in Winnipeg say with the Winnie the Pooh connection. Yeah
absolutely. Dal of Pooh.
What has a negative connotation too in like you know, just theory and strategy context of you create a honeypot to kind of trap people. And so, you know, I don't know where that fits in, but I think of the snatch as another term, you know, for a vagina. Right. So I think you're encapsulating something there, John, that's different than sweetness. I don't think sweetness kind of loses those connotations.
Right, with honeypot, it's a trap. It's because Winnie the Pooh
gets
stuck.
Honey is richer than sweet.
What about orchid?
Orchid, that's pretty.
I've never heard a vagina referred to as an orchid, though obviously it's been personified in art that way. I've never heard someone be like, hey, nice orchid or something.
No. People don't usually just say, hey, nice vagina either, you know?
point taken. But David, like we talk about like the coming together of the left and right sides of the brain to create this awareness and this experience, right? But we know that at one time it's just like we weren't operating with the same sort of equipment, so to speak. So and we recognize that all animals have consciousness. So they're operating at sort of like a pre-mathematical level, right? The body it speaks of symmetry and asymmetry, and it speaks a language of geometry, but it's not math. It's about relationships.
No, it's because it's everything else behind it, and the way that it gets transmuted into something else, something new.
Does asymmetry get compensated for?
Does asymmetry always get compensated for?
Yeah.
As far as we know. But that's the question. We don't know if the universe is asymmetrical or symmetrical. That's always the big argument.
Well, yeah, but that seems to be the thing that's being communicated with the formative and the sustaining orders, is that there's these two orders that coexist, and there's something mysterious about how they coexist, because one is symmetrical and the other one is asymmetrical. But ultimately, the asymmetrical one is still in balance. It's just that because there's a law of compensation. So you have a distortion being introduced, and yet it's completely equilibrized because of its counterbalancing its own, you know, its own displacement.
Right. I mean, asymmetry is what allows for infinite novelty and fractalization to begin with.
Well, the Fibonacci series itself, I mean, just to quickly here, you have the golden, the phi ratio, which is an irrational number, which doesn't exist in manifest form. But the Fibonacci numbers, you just take any two consecutive Fibonacci numbers, and it's an approximation of phi. And the farther you get into the series, the closer the approximation is, but it never fully exceeds the ratio, the actual ratio itself. And I just think it's fascinating that you have the two towers built into this phi ratio. So it's almost like this 9/11 event was sort of inherent in the substructure of reality itself.
Right, because the sustaining order is actually Metatron. So you have a template of Metatron, which is just essentially the six directions or the cube, being replicated in the tree from the supernal to the terrestrial. And so, but it's all about, like, you know, the ending of 2010 where you're looking at the monolith and then you see the reflection of the monolith in the water and it looks like it's just like one long monolith, you know? So it's as if you're looking at, if the one tower is a reflection of the other tower, it's taking it and it's, instead of them being side by side, it's connecting them so one's above and one's below, but they're completely united. So it's like we would be relating to material existence as the reflection from the template above. But it's interesting. I don't know if you guys have seen 2010, The Year We Made Contact, but there's the very, very ending of it where the sun is coming out the side of the monolith. It's very, you know, it's a symbolic thing. Came out the same day as Foreigner's Agent Provocateur, by the way, which itself has the an F for Foreigner, but Pei is F in Hebrew. And so, and it's got the colors, the primary colors, which are all the way through 2010 on the album cover. And so, yeah, same day and year, Foreigner Provocateur in 2010, The Year We Made Contact. But if you turn the F, you can see the two towers in the Solomon Building, in a sense, you know, it's like...
That's 84, right? 1984, I think if I'm correct on that.
Yeah, it was 1984, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Which has a whole other mythology built in, you know, a whole other set of significances.
Mm-hmm.
And director Peter Hames, who I guess, I know Sean Fella, his website, he has a whole like pages about Peter Hames and some of the date significances in terms of the birthdays and the loops. And
mm-hmm.
if anybody wants to check that out. But yeah, that comes up again and again.
The
cryptocryptology material.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys, I'm finding out it's all about Jaws. Jaws says it all. Jaws is the tower, because it's the pay, it's the mouth, and then it's this whole thing with the fucking fish. It's tripping me out. And 007. 007 and Jaws. I don't know.
What about 007?
Diamonds are forever?
What's that?
007, Diamonds are forever?
Yeah, License to Kill. They pull the license out of the shark's belly in the first Jaws, and it says 007 on it. But 007, The Spy Who Loved Me, and the original Jaws are the same length. And there's this whole crazy thing where if you take... Because 007, The Spy That Loved Me came out in 77, 1977, and it was the same day and year that Styx the Grand Illusion came out. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but I have that in the Dropbox if anyone's interested.
And 7777 is also the Metatron's cube. So an 888, that wouldn't that also be like a water bearer? Or
888 is the geometrical value of Jesus Christ in Greek, right?
Right. So that's the water bearer. 777. If you look at a bismuth crystal, it's they're all sevens. They're like the hooks. And what's really special about this metal is that its half-life is a billion times the age of our universe. So a it's billion. Like this. Yeah.
Forever.
How do we measure that?
So it's like diamonds. Diamonds are forever. 777.
Oh right, yeah.
So that's why this whole like bismuth and water bearer Zohar thing is really cool, because it's like it's got 777, and then
888, the water bear. So I guess this is sort of like, I don't know, where David Bowie and Crowley left off. Like, he couldn't give it all away. But going from 888 to 99999, that's our next quantum leap. But well, I don't know if that.
I mean,
would
the
be,
whole thing is that you guys have all seen that video, the incredible number 9 or whatever, all the shit that you can do with 9. Anyone seen that?
Yeah.
So, like, basically, like, we're in a loop with 9. Like, we never actually reach 10. Like, you could represent the whole Fibonacci sequence with just a series of 9s. You guys don't... Have you seen that? We should...
No, put how this do you do up. That? That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's the craziest fucking math shit I've ever seen in my life. It's like, basically, you can see that we never actually arrive. Like... with the pattern that we are, like, it just keeps cycling out, and that's the spiral, and then that's what the text is emphasizing, is that we don't reach 10, but something's going to happen where we reach 10. Like, we're in this, like, spiraling loop thing, and then it's missing this piece, and when the piece gets introduced into it, then we have a whole different perceptual lens of how we, like, literally exist. Like, we completely see ourselves differently. So, that's pretty exciting. That's,
like, in Revelation... Go on.
Like, if please, going back please. To the Mandelbrot fractal, I mean, if you look at Seahorse Valley, they're sixes and nines. I mean, if you open like their mouths, I mean, that's where the apple is. Like, this is just kind of goes back to like Snow White, or I mean, just eating the apple. Like, this is a once you've met the mother, like, it's kind of your responsibility to tame the demiurge or tame the beast. So it's, that goes back to, the mirror, strange attractors.
That was the thing the Snow White thing with the mirror of who's the fairest of them all that the witch keeps asking. That is Silver Star Freemasonry, because it's the fatal. The FATAL is an acronym for fairest of them all or whatever. It's there's a whole of all the land or something. It's like that came, but it's a pentagram. And then there's the pentagram of Venus, as Venus intersects with its own pathway as it moves through space. But then also the pentagram at the center of the apple. You know, if you cut an apple open and you see that pentagram. So, it's interesting. I don't know.
I just want to throw out in Revelation, I guess after the return of Christ, there's a 1,000-year period of happiness, and that's the 10. So maybe that's has something to do with this numerological quandary you were just describing there. Did we get that 1,000 years?
Yeah, it seems to be emphasizing that the order of things in that specific way, that what we see as the Fibonacci sequence is actually subject to change. And that we don't have a basis for comparison. We relate to ourselves as we know ourselves, but that literally with insight that doesn't come from the left, it comes from the right. It transforms the whole thing. And that's pretty nuts.
The other thing about this base 10, I guess Wally and I and Boise had this whole conversation about Babylon, and you were talking about the sun squares earlier and the 36, I guess. In Babylon, he says that they used a base 6 number system.
Mm-hmm.
And so with your hands, if you want to use base 6, you can count on your hands 36 digits. Whereas if you convert to base 10, you can only count 10 digits on your hands. And so it was a way to take away power from the people to kick us off of that base 6 system. Is
right.
What kind of theory? And maybe it's more convenient for maybe, banking or whatever to have, something where you could easily move decimals on a ledger as opposed to just having hand counting. And so it was sort of an abstract, like, transaction.
Isn't that part of the basis of Common Core is counting with hand, or doing everything based on counting with the hands?
Yeah, there's a whole thing going on because it's the digits of your fingers equal 14.
So if you say your thumb has two, and then every hand has three, every finger has three, excuse me, in the phalanges. So you have 14 plus 14. God, we talk about this on Always Record quite a bit, but they say God is the hidden hand, right? So you add the extra 14, and then you end up with 42. So it's 14 plus 14 plus 14, and 14 is the temperance card in tarot, right? So there's this interesting thing that seems to be going on there with Samech as Sagittarius, and that it's also 14 segments that surround the Rosicrucian cross, which is the unfolded cube. And so then the cube relates to the hand as yud and kaf, and as the closed and open hands, and how that relates is when you're looking at the gates, closed gate, open gate, as you arrange the letters, you know. So the ninth gate is an open gate, so to speak. So because of where you know yud is placed, and so there's a whole thing going on there in terms of 42 associated with a water gate, you know.
Again, if you want to listen to the rest of this call, there was about an hour left on this conversation. If you want to hear the rest of it, just hop on over to the members section, and you're going to look up the April 20th member hangout. I'll also link to it in the show notes. Thank you. Have a great day. Did you see the lights as they fade?